just to bring up to date here, basically, Tamar, where we are. Well, the approach that we've been taking is that Shimshon came to be Matzil not from the actual shlita of the Plishtim in terms of their military shlita, but rather that it was a situation that is very similar to the current situation with Israel and the Arabs, in which, culturally speaking, the Arabs are sholet. In other words, the normal Jew in the street is becoming more and more Arabic by the day, starting to look Arabic, talking Arabic in a sense, I mean Hebrew, but Hebrew as Arabic. Sense of system of values is Arabic. It's a horrific thing. There's very, very few people that are completely immune to that. You know, I mean, there are obviously full societies, the Dati Lumi, the Haredim, and so on and so forth. But the sense of an Israeli identity is much more an Arab identity than a Jewish identity, which is shocking. And what it is that Shimshon goes out to do is to be one of the boys and to make from within, to make that distinction by showing them and being like them, how different the search for justice, decency, and so on, how different they are with a Ben Yisrael than with an Arab. So he bedafka goes out of his way to do everything as if he's part of that society. Kiken yasu abachurim, and you know, the whole business. They see him as being one of them. Now he's going to, he knows exactly what he's doing. He's setting them up. And now he's going to say, well, look at the way you guys are treating me. I mean, I would never go overboard in a disproportionate response to that, you know, but I mean, we understand that. There's got to be some level of honesty, decency, and so on around here. And even when he found the woman that he was looking for, what he found in her afterward, it is just like a very brief kind of thing, but what he found in her the second time, when it says that she was actually Motzer Chen Beinav, was the point that he found her to be the correct person for achieving exactly what he wanted to achieve. He wanted a nice, naive, plishti girl who will serve as a perfect foil for this society. And so the idea of leaving an impact on the Plishti society, Bimoto, had nothing to do with the military. That's obvious. It had nothing to do with the military. We're going to change anything. But the Hachel is in terms of identity, first of all. What's more, the most important element that is at stake over here is, as Pinchas actually defined it originally, is the identity issue. The identity issue, according to Pinchas, from the very beginning, was fundamentally a sexual issue. That's clear. That starts with Zimri, and it has to do with the alliances that you make, with the way that you hang out with the Goyim, which is the way the Torah presents it. You know, what's going to end up, if you have one society, you're going to end up marrying each other. And that's, somehow or other, that's the problem. So then that ties very much in to the way that Rabbi Zacks pointed out the entire story of Bereshis is again and again and again sexual differences from the Umayyads, and that this begins with the original interaction with Avimelech, Melech Plishtim. That's what it was always about. How could you treat me this way? I'm such a nice guy. I'm such a good guy. Yeah, but you're a sexual maniac. No, I'm not. You certainly are. Because if you weren't, then this would never have happened. You're someone who refuses to acknowledge that your entire approach is the Isha Yashar Ben Av Yaseh, so to speak. So that people are really believing that they're doing it. He's the ultimate Isha Yashar Ben Av, in a sense. The Melech Plishtim. He's presenting himself as, you know, this is a Chada'am. You almost remark on me. How could you do this? And he insists on an answer. Tell me, I'm not asking this, he says to Avraham. I'm not asking this as a rhetorical question. Tell me, what did I do? And these types of subtle interactions become somehow central. What's more, is that we also spoke about the way that the story in Shoftim at the end, in terms of Dan's position and the relationship to Pelegish Begiva, and the way that the Levi behaved, and the inyanim that have to do with the Beis Hamikdash, all of them have something to do with the nature of how sexual behavior has, in its roots, has issues of the involvement of Pinchas, the questions of identity, the future of Yerushalayim, and the whole idea of the tkufa of the Isha Yashar Be'inam Yaz. And what is amazing is that the Torah should actually set up an individual whose tafkid is sex and is given a bracha to have unrestrained sexuality and sexual prowess, and at the same time is given the classic tikkun to Raya, Sota, Bikukula, and so on and so forth, which is that he's being made a nazir, and the two seem to be at complete odds with each other. Now, obviously, they're not meant to be at odds with each other, and the point over here specifically has to be that the interrelationship, which we saw from the Zohar, which was so much a question of the piru that was being caused, the way that the keches of Shimshon go all the way back to Adam HaRishon, and he becomes, according to the Zohar, one of the Shisha. And now it is that the breakdown in Gan Eden also had to do, obviously, entirely with sex, but even sex in terms of marriage in the end of Aisha Shenatata Imadi. And the subsequent bris with Avraham Avinu revolving around exactly the very same part of the organism that is so much the bracha of Shimshon, that is, I mean, it's just undeniable that this is what we are looking at and that the Torah wants to resolve in the Mashiach, the Yaakov Avinu's vision of his Mashiachiyut and his connection to the Mashiach Ben Yosef that we were talking about before, that all of that is going to need a completely different level of the appreciation of the various elements of sexuality. We were even talking about on Tisha B'Av, we were talking about the way that the Churban Beis HaMikdash is itself, you were there, is itself sadomasochism. And that the pain involved in the Churban is the reason that the Kruvim are Mu'urim's episode, which means that there was no way to consummate the connection of the Ra'u Ervata because there was no connection until there was a shared level of pain. And that is itself pure sadomasochism in terms of the translation of the elements of the Beis HaMikdash, which revolve around sex, which we see from Yaakov Avinu and the Mekeres of Ein Zeh and Beis Elokim and the Chadar HaMitot and the Limudim that we have from the Mokum of the Beis HaMikdash and the fact that we have this all this pornographic imagery in the Beis HaMikdash and that the Ra'u Ervata specifically relates to the reduction of the relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu into pornography. And that means that the achievement of true relationship has to be in a way that incorporates the built-in avelus from the beginning of the Beis HaMikdash and the beginning of the Mishkan and the Shnei B'nai Aaron and so on and so forth. And which over there also we attribute to the fact that they could not find a woman that they were able to relate to. All of these issues point without any question to the centrality of the issue to the entire presence of the Beis HaMikdash from the very beginning, to the essence of what Gan Eden is about, to the essence of what the Bris with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is about, to the understanding of the nature of identity and why identity, which is so related by Pinchas to the idea of Yichus, that it becomes the entire nature of the Yud and the Hey and the Yerusha Sa'aretz and part of the flow of issues from Maisa Bereshis until the Knesa La'aretz and ultimately the end, which is the can I rely on the Ne'amanut of a sexual relationship. It becomes the issue of David HaMelech and Avivi Miyazavuni. It becomes the introduction to Rosh Hashanah through Elul. It defines for us the Arboim Yom of the Tikkun of Moshe Rabbeinu, of the Maisa Ego, which was itself a breakdown in Aisha Shenatata Imadi, which was itself part of the other things that that Shimshon was looking into, which is bondage, slave bondage type of sexual problems, which he was getting himself tied up and so on and so on. All of these things are not possibly coincidental. They're just too powerful. And the review of the psukim, of the clarity of how much he needed to be part of the boys and how much he keeps dealing with them as if he's another one of the boys. You know, oh, I got a riddle. And the whole thing is meant to justify to everyone the type of behavior. He's just doing what everybody's doing. And yet he's undermining the way in which Plishtim can do things as opposed to the way that a good, strong, sexy Jewish teenager does things. So that it becomes mamish, this vision of what was that crazy movie again? What's his name? Bastards. I forgot what it's called.
Inglourious Bastards.
Inglourious Bastards.
Yeah. So I'm saying that there's really something that is very primal about that image. And that's why they used it. I mean, it was a crazy movie. It's just Meshuggah and a super Jew with like, what? What is it about? What was it talking to? What underlying psychology was it addressing in people that just love the idea, right? I was like, this is great. And it was all like local stuff, all local stuff, going to the bar together. And yeah, and it's like all crazy. I don't know. So something's happening. So we took that approach. And then we started reading along with that approach to see whether it's consistent.
Just one question, Rabbi. Why is that something that is negative? That identity of the... is it that the identity of the super Jew is something that's negative, or that his search for identity among the Plishtim / Arabs, you know, whatever iteration
we ever talk about negative? I don't know what you refer to.
Okay, so it's not, I thought in the beginning when Rebbe was saying that as Shimshon is trying to be one of the boys and finding himself and or asserting himself, placing himself squarely in a Plishti setting, absorbing their language, absorbing their mores, then that is part of becoming the new Jew. I mean, right. It happened 100 years ago.
That was positive.
He's like a chalutz. This is a good thing.
But he was going into it in order to be Moshiach.
Right. In this, I think
I'm saying it's like, a natural thing. Not that he was Min HaShamayim, he was told that this is his tafkid.
Right.
I'm saying that this is something that you would do. If you were able on some level to try to bring out, don't you understand how different we are? And it would drive you crazy, to as it does many people, to watch these Jews mixing with Arabs, acting as if it's giving them the feeling that they're the same as Jews. It's maddening. It's absolutely maddening. And if there was a way that you could actually show it from deep inside by going into their society and being befotzeitz things like that, it would be amazing. That's
like
the ultimate mistarvim.
Mistarvim, exactly. It's like Chauda. Yeah. It's like the original Yigal Alon who would, you know, I'm not Yigal, yes, Yigal Alon and many of his ilk spoke right. Fluent Arabic, dressed Arab, went in there, understood I'm the Balabayit, and the only way to be the Balabayit is to go into that Arab, the Bedouin village, the Arab tent, and to be able to play on their playing field. Because call oh, that I'm going in there looking like I'm dressed as like someone from the shtetl, speaking with my Ashkenazis, it's not going to work.
Right.
Anyway,
but he did it as a Jew, though.
But the advantage, sorry, you know, I'm just one. The advantage of this is that it's completely natural. It's not a response to some kind of divine issue. A healthy person like Shimshon, who has these special kaychas, is the most natural thing in the world for him, exactly like those chalutzim, is to do just what he did. And that's what's so attractive about it. Because instead of being this weird story, it becomes, well, of course, yeah, what would you do if you were a healthy teenager with a penis that never stopped working? You'd do the same thing. And you would feel immensely empowered and like, the hell with all of these jerks. They don't scare me. So we found a lot of her Muslim that, you know, were backing that in terms of the relationship with his parents, how he tried to get his parents, but Dafka wanted his parents to come down and pretend that this was normal. This is the way Jews can mix. You know, no, this is what I want. Come on, let's make it a regular thing. You go down there, talk to him, talk to the parents, set things up. Let's make a wedding date, whatever. He blows it to smithereens, and it's so predictable that it's going to be blown to smithereens. Actually, it disappears just enough time for the father-in-law to obviously conclude he's never coming back. Let's get the girl. As soon as that's over, boom, he's back to blow up the whole village. It's amazing. It's brilliant.
I have to say, just like, and I understand this is tension. I don't want to get too far off because I know I've missed a couple of sessions and I don't want to derail. But that is why I never understood how from the sheer vantage point of attraction, how anyone would not, I'm not talking about male, female, I'm talking about human attraction, how anyone cannot be attracted to the new Jew, to the chalutz, the brawny, bronzed, you know, God of a Jew who's going in as comfortable in an Arab village as he is in his new kibbutz, compared to the pale little shriveled up worm of a shtetl.
100%.
It's
attractive to a lot of people.
What?
The one is very attractive to a lot of people, and the former is not.
No, that's right.
I grew up in a world where it was mamash hafuch. Where what was we were
yes,
trained
of
the,
you know,
of the, you know, of
I'm
the,
not catching
the
what
the average
is saying. It's not clear enough.
I'm saying that there are people that idolize the shtetl Jew and denigrate the chalutz.
So that's what I want
to say. Idolize them as what? They don't want to go to bed with them.
I'm sorry?
They don't want to go to bed with them. That's the point that Tamar is making. There's no attraction. There's no sense of the humanness of the person. There's no greater expression of what it is to be an Adam. These are the last people that he would want to go to bed with. That's the point. That's why it has to be sexual. The biggest raya of the failure the biggest raya of the failure of Haredi society or even of yeshiva society is that there is no one attractive. That's mind-boggling.
Wait a second. Not everything in this particular context, meaning I'm in a sense attracted to Rav Steinemann or Rav, I mean, there's a certain, not a sexual attraction, but there is an attraction.
It's a religious attraction.
There's nothing so beautiful.
It's a humanity attraction.
I'm just saying, if you look at my son in uniform, and it happens to be, yes, my son is a Haris, but you put any child in a uniform, gods or goddesses. That's just what
they
are.
I get it.
And I've had plenty of Bachrim walk through my door, and I just can't see it. And I don't want to derail the conversation.
No, I get it. That, no problem. But when it comes to a certain humanity that I'm attracted to, not a physical attraction, more of a mental attraction, a human attraction. I really am. I find that the humility in certain mankind, I'm in awe.
But,
yeah, it's not religion.
It doesn't exist anywhere else. So even at the cost of a complete loss of sexuality, it's still more attractive than the garbage out there.
No question. But
okay,
there's
I
still
agree 100%. There's nothing that is attractive about pure physicality. I understand that. But if you're able to be an Adam with all of this, it's
then,
infinitely greater.
Yes.
If whatever Gadol you're referring to.
No, I'm just thinking these ones that have actual humility.
If you're talking about people with those level of Yashras and Midas and Yedias HaTorah, who would be sexually attractive? It's tremendously more powerful. There's no comparison.
But who has that in their youth? What person is there? Such a thing as a whatever you call it, a guddle. There's
you
no.
Understand when you're talking about David HaMelech as a youth, you're talking about Yonatan as a youth. You're talking about the people that the Gemara talks about in the youth that the Tanoim, the Amoraim that were youthful when they were God knows what. when we're talking about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's ability to ejaculate when he's 120 years old, that we're bringing a riot for them. I understand. Why are these things important to us?
Well, that's a true statement. That's a true statement.
That's the reality of it. There is no fulfilled humanity without the power and presence of sexuality. It's horrific. It's a violation of the godless of Yisrael. There's no question about it. The fact is even worse than that. You would trust these people with your daughter. You would say, if I want my daughter to be safe, I'm sending her to sleep in such and such a Rav's house. And it should be the exact opposite. That kol ha'gadol mechaveros yitzur gadol himenu. And like Abaya said, you can't trust me. I would have slept with this girl for sure. I don't understand it. If Rabbi Akiva goes jumping up a palm tree to catch a girl, that because that's the metzias of a Rabbi Akiva. Exactly. That's the point. The very fact that you can say, I'm not cheshit this person in any way. I give them my kids. They're fine. That's a riot that something is fundamentally screwy.
Yes.
Who would believe such a thing? In the Gemara, they would believe such a thing? That you're less marked it?
That's true.
Okay.
I have the example. I have a basketball coach, a guy. So I don't really trust him. But the reason I trust him is because he loves women and he loves money. And he's attractive. And he's tall and you get... You're right. It's a good point.
No, Slabotka was a very good example of exactly this in the Kuda. What was the Rav that was the Mashgiach that was Nifter and then there Israel? Rav, the one who made a yeshiva in there. I forgot. Rav Schlanger. So Rav Schlanger said over once at the lunch table, right? So this was the Elsman, where the new kids were coming in. So Rav Schlanger says, look at that guy. He's gorgeous. That would have been a raya in Slabotka to be mekabelim to the yeshiva because that you're muted. I can't hear you. The first thing that they would look at in Slabotka is how sexually attractive he is. If he's attractive, then we want him. Because that was the whole, it's still the point, even in Chevron Yeshiva. It's still the point. There was that element in which the entire idea was the human. That was the whole point, and that was a continuation of a tremendous misera in that issue. So all of this, remember, you guys are judging things from a very local 20, 30-year-old minhagim in yeshiva, in which all of this became botel mavotel, and everybody's supposed to look like a slob and pretend that there is nothing that has to do with sexuality. It was never like that. Of course it wasn't like that. So it makes perfectly good sense for Shimshon to be expressive of the nature of Yisrael in this way. And that's what Tamar is pointing out. It's much more attractive and much more exciting, and it's the only way that you're going to have any kind of impact on the Umas Ha'ilam, that's for sure. That's exactly what blows them over.
I just want to introduce one thing, if I may. The only reason I can point this out is that it's extraordinarily intuitive to those who parent Israeli children. And when I say Israeli children, I mean standard Israeli children, not those who are being raised in Haredi, in Haredi Misgero. It is such a shoftim world in our cultural world. Right. And these children are absolutely beautiful. They're magnetic. They have a tremendous amount of confidence. Right. They are not necessarily religious in the strict sense. Their values are very different than what you're going to find in the lachatz of a yeshiva.
Right, but in a way, they're more proud to be a Ben Yisrael than the Ben Yeshiva is.
Are they ever? They define themselves. My children, they will define themselves as Bnei Yisrael.
Yes. They feel themselves being Bnei Yisrael. They look at all these other people. There's some kind of ghetto Jew, whatever, belongs in Europe. Then what do they have? And they don't have Shaykes Eretz Yisrael. Exactly. It's really true. They don't. Because the Shaykes Eretz Yisrael is indeed the land itself, is its fertility. This is the entire connection to the same nature of evolution that was Adam went hand in hand with the evolution of the earth that became Eretz Yisrael. It is inappropriate for Eretz Yisrael to be inhabited by people who don't have those mitzvahs. It's not part of what Eretz Yisrael is.
B'nei Tzion ha-mesula'im b'paz.
Exactly. Exactly. That was the beauty the whole time. Why did the Romans want to take all of those kids for sex? They didn't find anything like that anywhere else. And when Nebuchadnezzar talks about the kids that he brought over from Eretz Yisrael, perfection. But he couldn't find that in Bavel? No, he couldn't find that in Bavel. Exactly.
By Yirmiyahu? No, Chizkiyahu. It talks about Bachura Yisrael there also.
Yecheskel, you're talking about?
By Yecheskel, yeah.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I'm not Chizkiyahu. I'm sorry. Yecheskel, yes. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. So what are you saying? Menashe and Ephraim?
It speaks about Bachura Yisrael. The Gemara speaks about Bachura Yisrael in that context.
Yeah.
I think maybe by the Atzamos that he saw. Yeah.
I mean, these people are not standing there as models of what it is to be a Ben Yisrael, or to be the Benoist Yisrael or the Bachura Yisrael. Neither. The whole idea was their tremendous loyalty to their own sexuality and to their demonas and the bonos that were kashuas as Pischeya and the bonim that were so careful not to have relationships with any. That whole idea was, I mean, nobody would say that about these people.
It's the machlokas in Ger today, is it not?
I don't know anything about that. I don't know what they're arguing about.
Kedisha versus
I don't know. I don't know anything about it, you know.
All right.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised, you know. Because Ger always had some connection to strength, violence, sex, and so on. I mean, it's, you know.
My limited understanding of it is that if you go back to the Kutzker, the idea was Emes Kneve Al Timkor. That's really the guiding principle. And the Beis Yisrael, I think it's the Beis Yisrael was the former Rebbe or one of the former. There is an emphasis on Kedisha, on all of these very, very strict takanos in terms of how people are nohag and with women especially.
No, that I know.
And that the two, but the two now, that's what's going at loggerheads, Lamaisa. Those are the two shitas.
You're saying
behind
the sexual repression.
Yes. So I'm saying the word Kedisha, which was all of the takanos under
that. Was awful.
Became
was
the icker. And that this new Rosh Yeshiva, he's up saying that that's not the Kutzker. Whoever the East Auschwitz is there. So
yeah, okay, anyway. Fine. But anyway, no. So I think Tamar's point is very well taken. This is a general insight here. Okay. So anyway, so
Rebbe, I just want to sum up what I understood it actually on the earlier point that Tamar made. He wanted to be like a goy, but to do it as a Jew, because he was young and very vigorous. But I think in that sense, I don't think he's scheming. He's
I don't
really
understand
big.
Why you're saying he wanted to be a goy. He didn't want to be a goy. He didn't want to have anything to do with the goy. He is someone that is like you and me.
Yeah.
You don't want to be a goy, but if you had any way of blowing
you
want
to show that being a yid means you're a person.
You would love to.
I'm sorry?
You would love to if you had the energies of a Shimshon and you were capable of going in and blowing up the whole insane society like that's exactly what you would do. I'm saying these are natural things.
Yes. And I'm just saying he's not scheming.
He doesn't want to be a goy in the least. You keep going
He wants
back
to be what? Does he want to be? Does he want to melt into the land?
Where is your partner higher?
Yeah, I don't know.
He wants to act like a goy just to get into.
Does he
want to
be part of the land? Does
he
have a different approach?
We were meeting?
No, he knew. We sent out the thing. He knows. He definitely knows. He probably couldn't make it today. Probably has a meeting. You know, he wants to infiltrate. He doesn't want to be them.
I'm just arguing that he may not want to. He's not because I don't see him as scheming. I see him as being honest.
It's not
in his
scheming.
Pursuit. Okay, that's all I wanted.
You know, this is the ongoing. You're back to the same thing. Okay, fine. Then you know,
he's not
the way you've been all along about it. What's Beseder? We know that we're on two different paths here.
I don't understand. Edo also.
Rebbe just agreed with me, though, or Rebbe just characterized it that way too.
I don't believe it's scheming. I believe it's just a natural. It's not a desire to be like them. It's a natural. That's why it's not scheming. He's definitely scheming in wanting to blow them up. He knows damn well they're never going to be able to buy him the things that he said for the riddle. He knows damn well they're not going to get the riddle. He's just on the edge of something that's doable but won't be done. He's a genius. The whole thing is perfect. It comes across as being real and natural and so on. And it's totally a setup. He knows the girl's going to be given away. He knows that he's going to kill his father-in-law. And he knows all of this. Of course he knows. He's not an idiot. And he selects exactly the right people to get it done the way he wants.
But the story turns around and he gets sucked in.
But he's not the one controlling.
There is one thing he does want, and that's the girl. That's the difference.
You can have fun while you're doing it.
No, you're saying that he didn't love the girl? I mean, I'm not in 100% agreement. I don't know if that's
okay. Let's see. I don't have an opinion. Let's see how it goes along.
Let's go along.
Let's see what he's doing with the Leela. Let's make it all out.
Okay, let's go.
We'll see the elements. What does love have to do with love making and with sadomasochism and with all of the risks that he's taking and so on? I mean, look, you know that sex games are exactly like Shimshon is playing. You can get killed at any minute. Many people do get killed. And that's the way it is. You take a tremendous amount of risks, and that's the sexual excitement, correct? I'm sure you've read about this. I mean, I'm not being machadish. This is a well-known thing. People hang themselves until they're almost dead. Sometimes they die. I don't understand it, but it's a reality. This is the way it is. So the fact that he's doing this kind of stuff does not prove anything. It just proves that it's exciting and that he's exploring the absolute furthest stretches of the envelope that is possible to explore, which is exactly what needs to be done from the point of Super Jew. I need to know everything about sexuality, everything, in order that it should be completely and totally muchnas into the world of Avodah Shamayim. That's the reality. The very fact that the Gemara talks about Talmidei Chachamim, the reward for Talmidei Chachamim is to have kinky dogs for sex. I mean, that's disgusting. The Gemara says, no, that's the point. If you understand the drive to pornography and you understand the drive for kinky sex, then you will understand why Talmidei Chachamim are wild over Torah. And if you don't, you won't. That's all. It's all very nice to pretend that those are way out midrashim. And so these are straightforward Gemaras by the dozens. You want to talk about exactly the same thing the Gemara says. I don't know what he meant when he said, you know, this wild, sexy, aharonit, eranit kept him up all night, you know, screwing around. Now, I'm not sure whether that means a girl or whether it means meseches vachi, because that's an aharonit. I don't know, whichever one it is, it's basically the same idea. It could be the girl, it could be the meseches kept him up all night. And then, they don't even think about that as being strange. It's obvious. And the fact that the Mishnah Berurah brings this, for heaven's sakes, we can't get more standard Mishnah Berurah with that story of Meseches Chagiga appearing as this gorgeous girl. This is nobody wants to sleep with me. And then, this is the way Chazal view Torah. That's the reality of it. It's not metaphors. It's all hyperliteralism. And these people refuse to face up to it. You can't even say the words that the Gemara says, for heaven's sakes. The clarity of the simplicity of the physical equivalence and one complete ongoing flow of reality that extends from the lowest levels of physicality to the uppermost levels in these hyper-literal terms. It's one reality, that's all. That's the craziest thing. There's never any hangups. There's never any. I mean, tomorrow is Gemara Ksuvos. So what? So because this Arab went and feels her up between her nipples, this is a problem. He feels her up, so therefore she's going to be Asura. What kind of weird Lashon is that? Would you use that Lashon in a class of kids? Would you say that? Because he feels her up with her nipples? But it's like, it's just simple. It's a Mishnah, for God's sake. But people refuse to acknowledge it. And when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, oh, you guys with your hang-ups, that it's all taltalim shechorot, you think it's all black and dirty, I can tell you one thing, this is what I like more than anything else. To me, this is the most valuable elements in the Torah. What is that about? Anyway.
Okay. We're on.
And it's central to Bias HaMashiach, right? Everything that has to do with Mashiach has to do with sex. How do you explain that? So I think Tamar's point is 100%. It's the most natural thing in the world. Okay. It's really having it from a mother is exactly the point. Because that's the contrast of Abe Sisra. It's exactly the point. It's the mother who's the one that's in charge. It's the mother who's the one that talks about penises, always. Whether you're talking about Devora and Achikamti Devora, and this is what Bifra Peraot Bisrael, the contrast to the aim of Sisra in terms of the entire sense of what her vision of the pride in her son with her filthy language that the Torah doesn't care about talking about. That's that you can't even say those words in public. You literally can't say, you can't translate the pasuk without getting arrested. And go ahead, you know, be hang up about it, but that's the reality. What pasuk are we up to?
Let's do Yud Aleph. I think we should start.
Well, Yerdu Shloshet Alafim Ish Mihuda.
Perek Yud Aleph, pasuk Yud Aleph.
Sorry, I didn't think we got that far.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where we're in the middle of discussing who saw who over here. So Vayikir Otomoto. So they bring in these kids to be, okay, we need to have friends and it's all friendly. So this becomes now, I think we were all made on what was it that they saw in him, right? And the point that we made was, is what they saw in him is what Tamar just was talking about, what she saw in her son.
Mm-hmm.
So, because they had to have seen something. They saw something that turned them on, that made them want to participate with this the way they would have done in a standard type of wedding. This is great. But, you know, he doesn't have any friends. What are we going to do? So, okay, let's bring in the boys and we'll make him friends. Lovely. What, do you want to have some kind of quiet ceremony over here? Okay, so he was counting on that. That's why I tried to make it as much a normal wedding as possible. So the very fact that the pasuk has to be made, that it was Vayikir Otamoto, is a very strong indication. We were on that last week, that was the Tamar point. Vayomer lehem Shimshon, I got a great riddle, guys. Achudan alachem chida. Like, this is the only thing you can come up with to entertain them, Ido. He doesn't have any cheshbonos. No. All right. So here's the deal. Okay. Now, if you get it, I'm going to give you the whole Sheva Brachas, you know? I'm going to give you Shloshim Sadinim, Shloshim Chalifot Begadim. This is going to be great. You know what? You're going to look as good as I look. But if you don't, then you got to give me the same thing. It's fair. Okay, they say, go ahead, let's hear.
It's a 30 to 1. Actually, he's betting them 30 to 1. Right? He has to come up with 30.
Yeah, I learned it that way too.
They all, yeah, right? It's not really one to one. It's not.
And he has to give each one of the 30.
He has to give each one. How does it work? He has to give each one of the 30. Each one of the. No, he has to give.
I'm gonna give the group
30. He gives one to one. He gives 30. He has to come up with 30 pieces of clothing, and they only have to come up with one piece of clothing each.
Each, right?
Okay.
And so that's what he's saying. He's saying, listen, yeah. I'm ready to take all of you guys on.
All you guys on, yeah.
I'm ready to take all you guys on. Okay. I mean, I could do it with hand wrestling, but, you know, this is better.
And also, if one of them would have gotten it, does that mean all 29 get the clothing? Is that what we're saying?
Yeah. Okay. If you in aggregate can come up with this, that's great, they say. Okay. That's not bad at all. Boy, this guy's got guts. Okay. And look, you know, the truth is, when I was saying before that, you know, you can all look as good as me. I mean, there's got to be a reason why it's specifically in terms of these Sadinim and Begadim, right? And there's this group of telling them, okay, listen, you farm boys, you know, you want to look like me? Okay, I buy you all Nikes. I buy you all boss suits. What do you say? That sounds great.
Yeah.
That is beautiful. Okay. So, Vayomer Lahem, we talked about this, the way that it has a double meaning. Miha'ochel yatsa ma'achel, right. So, I think, who was it that pointed out the double meaning? I think it was Ari.
No, it was Moshe. Remember? Moshe Handel, I think.
Well, where's Moshe Handel? He's been hiding behind some weird picture.
Yeah, it's a picture there.
He wanted to have it in terms of himself and his parents, I think. He was suggesting. Come back to us, Moshe Handel. I was supposed to get along without you. Hello? Okay. So, Mia Ochel, so the lion, I guess. He's the eater, the predator. Yatsa ma'achal. Ume'az yatsa matok. So what was the Oz again? Moshe Andel was pointing out. He's sorry he can't talk, but he can write, and he's not writing either. What excuse is it to say, sorry, can't talk while you write, and then you don't write? Something's funny about that. The poor guy's probably in the middle of some serious meeting.
Or he's on a bus, or he's on a train. Who knows where he is?
What a great time to torture. So he gave us a couple of levels of the Az Yatsa Matok. I mean, how do we understand the Me'az? Is the Az the sense from the from death? Az Kamavet?
No, Az Kanamer. It should be Gibor Kari, Az Kanamer.
Yeah, so maybe that's the point. That the Oz, maybe the Oz has to do with the combination of something that, you know, you can't, it's just too much that it's also dead. I don't know. But I remember that Moshe had a few insights about it, and I can't reconstruct them. We're really missing our Edo notes. You'll notice, boss man, right?
Yeah,
you didn't do anything for Edo this week, did you? No.
I spoke to Edo.
Yeah, but you didn't get away with murder.
It's true.
Yeah. I don't get it.
Tisha B'Av, what can I say?
I hear you. He'll write later after we make fools of ourselves. He'll write later. You know, that's what Achitofel did. Let everybody come up with the wrong answers. I'll catch you straight afterward.
Is it possible? No, I think. Is it possible the Oz are bees?
Yeah, I mean, that was, I think, one of Moshe's suggestions.
Right.
Right. Okay, so it's getting close. Now, what's the meaning of the 3 days that it should be vayi bayom ha-shvi'i? I mean, what's the shloshet yamim have to do with anything? It's not really important, is it?
Well, they tried unconventionally to figure it out.
So, I mean, the way that the Mitzvah learns is yom ha-shvi'i does not mean yom ha-shvi'i. Yom ha-shvi'i means Shabbos. Because otherwise it doesn't make sense to say shloshet yamim and then talk about Yom HaShvi'i, right? Lo yimei, lo li yimei
amishteh. No, it doesn't make sense, Pashut.
Rivi'i li yimei amishteh.
But then what would be the significance of the fact that
it's Shabbat? Shimshon wouldn't have been there on Shabbos. That's how he learns it. So they needed to talk to the girl. Now, how could they talk to the girl if Shimshon is around? But he was keeping Shabbos. So he's not going to come to this ridiculous Goyish bar on Shabbos. There's limits. So that's when they took their opportunity to speak to the girl. No, it really puts things into focus. It's beautiful.
And the standard shot would be that as the deadline approached, that they realized the guy, meaning when it was 7 days away, we'll figure it out sometime. But they tried to figure it out. And then as the deadline approached, I'm just saying that's partial.
It would be totally irrelevant to us that there were 3 days that they didn't figure it out. Totally irrelevant. What do I care?
Because they tried to do it in the normal way first. They tried to sit around and figure it out. And then they saw that was not a strategy. They weren't succeeding that way. So
therefore what? They give up and we'll try to deal with it on the seventh day? What kind of shot is that?
Because as the deadline approached, they were in desperation.
But then you're not answering the question. We don't need to know the 3 days. And for any purpose at all, if they're only going to use the deadline approaching as their sense of desperation, it reduces the meaning by saying 3 days. Because what we're trying to get to is an increasing level of frustration, not, well, we'll try for 3 days and now we'll go play on the merry-go-round.
Nobody says that pshat.
Why would anybody say that pshat? It doesn't say anything.
You're saying the third day is Shabbos?
The fourth day
of Shabbos.
The Sheva Brachos were Shabbos.
Shabbos. Okay, yeah, I get it.
So they tried for 3 days and then Shabbos came along. They're getting frustrated. So yeah. Shimshon's out of there. So, okay, look, now we ain't going to be taking this loss. You got to do something. Beautiful. All right, gentlemen, that does it for tonight. It's Moshe Andel that's supposed to be writing, and it's Ido Wernick that's supposed to be keeping the notes. Our secretary is gone, and our pshat giver is gone. How are we supposed to continue like this? Not only that, our attorney is gone. Where is Ari Iyer?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, really, it's a lot of fun.
I was with guests just now, and I said, you have to understand, these are ninth graders who now have white beards, and their grandparents are still arguing and yelling at each other. Mm-hmm.
It's wonderful, Baruch Hashem. Okay, everybody, see you. Thank you so much.
Bye bye, Rabbi.
Looking forward to some resolutions.